have spit valves? It's a good trivia question. But I also wonder if there's an actual answer. Do we know all of the instruments?
I'm going to look that up now. Let's see. How many?
The other question is, how much spit can a spit valve hold? Like, presumably at some point it gets filled up and you have to empty it. But is it like so much that they don't have to worry about it when they have like a concert? The mystery of the spit valve.
Two types. So baritone and contrabass saxophones, trumpets and trombones. Okay. So trumpets and trombones and baritone and contrabass saxophones. And woodwinds don't have spit valves. I think tuba has one. I don't know. I can't get a clear answer.
It's okay. Someday we will know. Or not.
Someday.
We'll just live in mystery thinking about spit valves all the time.
Or I could ask my band teacher.
Yeah.
I'll get back to you on that next week.
Yeah. Tell them you want spit valve 101. Well, I look forward to hearing it sometime. I've never played a trombone. It always seemed fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's harder than it looks, though, gotta say. I tried it out, and it's hard. It's really hard to hold a note.
Yeah, I think basically every instrument is kind of hard.
Yeah. Also, you have to, like, sort of half speak into it. Hmm. Like, you're like, doo, but it's like, it's super hard. Basically,
maybe you should check out that book, Scout Is Not a Band Kid, that I read. That was a graphic novel.
Sounds good. I am officially band kid.
You're a band kid. So is Scout, technically, eventually. Not when she first joins. Anyways, on that note,
we are
just about
out of time for today. We hope you get lots of quality reading time. So we'll be back next week to talk about some more awesome books. Until then, happy reading.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Jo Downing of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets me my drinks for free. And he's quick with a joke or to light up your smoke. But there's some place that he'd rather be. He says, Bill, I believe this is killing me. As a smile ran away from his face. Well, I'm sure that I could be a movie star. If I could get out of this place. Oh, la, 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 di, di, da. La, la, di, di, da, di, da. Now Paul is a real estate novelist who never had time for a wife. And he's talking with David, who's still in the Navy. And probably will be for life. Saturday, and the manager gives me a smile, 'cause he knows that it's me they've been coming to see, to forget about life for a while. And the piano sounds like a carnival, and the microphone smells like a beer, and they sit at the bar and put bread in my jar and say, man, what are you?
Hello, everybody, to 90.7 FM, Clubhouse Radio. And if you don't know that wonderful song, it is Billy Joel by Piano Man. And today I'm joined with DJ Phoebs, and we're going to be having a show, and we're going to be talking about the police system in the U.S. and some ways it can improve. But before we do, I will be right back with your daily news and weather.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Columbia Green Community College started the fall semester on September 6th with a 5% increase in enrollment since last year. Columbia Green President Carly Drummer credited the enrollment increase to the new curriculum programs the school launched in time for the 2022-23 school year. She said, and I quote, "The college has several exciting new programs, including the cannabis retail and sales micro-credentials and the police basic training certificate. In addition to flagship programs in nursing and transfer programs in psychology and individual studies remain solidly enrolled. We're all very optimistic about these trends," end quote. Drummer said the referenced enrollment increase reflects the statistics for the first day of classes, but the final enrollment numbers will not be known until October. In the lead-up to the start of the fall semester, the Greenport-based community college hosted its first in-person student orientation in 3 years. More than half of the school's class offerings are being offered in person this year, but scheduling options for students who prefer online classes are still being accommodated. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. Three Democrats will be on the ballot for the November Coeymans Town election. Former town clerk Cindy Rosie and Ron Hodling are running for the two open seats on the town board, and Peter DeLuke is running for highway superintendent. At the party caucus in July, there were no nominations for town clerk and town justice, so the Republican nominees are running unopposed. Town board and highway superintendent positions, as well as town clerk slot, are vacant after those elected officials stepped down. Rosie served as town clerk for 4 years before unsuccessfully running for town supervisor in 2021. She said, and I quote, "I have lived in this community for 11 years. I want to use the experience I have gained in working for local municipalities to make a difference on the Coeymans Town Board," end quote. Her platform includes the implementation of a new ethics law and transparency in government. Rosie was one of the organizers to successfully file a petition to put a proposed $7 million town hall project on the ballot in November. Hodling, a longtime resident of Coeymans, said he also wants to see more transparency in local government. Hodling said, and I quote, "Living in the town of Coeymans the majority of my life, I have served this community in many ways, such as youth sports, local EMS, and sitting on my church parish council, to name a few," end quote. He is calling for open government and fiscal responsibility. Hodling said, and I quote, "We need more things for the youth and open collaboration between the village and the town. I want an out-in-the-open government," end quote. He agreed the current town hall building has outlived its useful life, but questioned the process and wanted additional information to be shared with the community. Peter DeLuke is running for highway superintendent to fill the vacancy created by the retirement of longtime superintendent Scott Searles. DeLuke said, and I quote, "I am ready to serve the public and listen to their needs while working with the town board to budget for all phases of operation for the highway and beautification departments. I will use my experience from my current position at New York State Department of Transportation to bring some of today's technology and programs to the town," end quote. The general election ends on November 8th this fall, and you can read the full story at theupstater.com. Liz Montgomery is reporting for Porcupine Soup. Forest Rangers responded over the weekend to two separate calls for injured hikers, one who was found just feet from the edge of Catterskills Falls. Greene County 911 contacted the Rangers on the afternoon of September the 3rd about a person with an unstable lower leg injury on the Marys Glen Trail. Rangers responded along with rescue crews and located a 32-year-old woman from Washington, D.C., splinted her injured ankle, gave her crutches, and helped carry her to a waiting ambulance that transported her to Kingston Hospital. On the morning of September 4th, Greene County 911 contacted Rangers with a report of a person falling from the top of Catskills Falls. When the Rangers responded, they located a 22-year-old man from New Jersey with an unstable right ankle injury. He was found at the top of Catskills Falls in the creek, approximately 12 feet from the edge of the 260-foot high fall. After moving the injured person to a safer spot, Rangers, Hunter Police, and Hunter Ambulance administered first aid and carried him to the trail. The man was eventually transported to Kingston via ambulance. And you can read that full story at porcupinesoup.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 9th. Local early morning temperatures range from 53 degrees in Windham to 57 in Woodstock. Regional average soil temperature is 68 degrees. Early morning fog burns off by 8 a.m. and the clouds disappear, giving us a hot and sunny afternoon with a high of 84 at 4 p.m. Near dark, comfortable conditions return, and we will see a low of 55 overnight. Saturday, another foggy morning and a partly cloudy afternoon with a high of 85. 60 degrees overnight takes us into a dry but cloudy-looking Sunday with a high of 79. Some rain chances return overnight into Monday, which will have a high of 79 again. Pollen levels for today and the whole weekend will be medium. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:29 a.m., low tide at 9:13 a.m., high tide again at 3:01 p.m., low tide once again at 9:27 p.m. Today's current strength will be high, and today's river temperature will be 74 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:04 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:25 a.m. Okay, and for the weekend, the Rip Van Winkle Sandbar times are 7:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Saturday and reappearing from 8 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. Sunday. Again on Sunday, it shows up 8:15 a.m. to 1 p.m. And it will be coming back after 9 p.m. The current will be strong and the water will be dipping deeply, so it will be exposing more of the river bottom surface. Sun will cook you Saturday afternoon, otherwise it will be a great time to be on the river this weekend. Looking way up, we see that the sun is shiny but sleepy and not really putting off much space weather. We have a couple near-Earth objects expected this weekend. The biggest will be by today, coming in at 59 meters wide, but at 14 times farther away than the moon, it poses no danger. Solar wind speed is currently 510 kilometers per second at 9.03 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 75. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
I don't feel a single thing. Have the pills done too much? Haven't caught up with my friends in weeks, and now we're out of touch. I've been driving in LA, and the world feels too big. Like a floating ball that's bound to break, snap my psyche like a twig. And I just wanna see if you feel the same as me. Do you ever get a little bit tired of life? Like you're not really happy, but you don't wanna die. Like you're hanging by a thread, but you gotta survive. Cause you gotta survive. Like your body's in the room. But
Hello, everybody. That was M. Behold, Numb Little Bug. And today, you are listening to... Oh, my Lord. Excuse me, audience. My mind is drawing a blank. You know, it's the Friday vibes. Back to school starting. You know, everything's busy. But you are listening to Clubhouse Radio on 90.7 FM, broadcasting Catskill, Acre, Hudson. And today, I'm joined with DJ Phoebs. And we're going to be talking about...
Hello, everybody.
And we're going to be talking about the police system, specifically in the U.S. Sorry to any foreign homies who listen to the show. I mean, it'd be kind of surprising if they did, though. But we still appreciate your support, nonetheless. So, yeah, I got a list of points I want to go down, and we're going to talk about. The first one being the difference between defunding police and reforming police. Because I'm pretty sure everybody's heard of the defund the police movement. And all sources on this are from HTTPS, blah, 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 you know, the website. Defundthepolice.org. And, yeah, without further ado, let's first discuss the difference between defunding and reforming. Because the defund the police movement does not call defunding all of police funds. It mainly focuses on addressing and correcting issues within the system. I understand that the name can be a little bit scary, but the movement calls to reallocate funds, specifically towards military-grade weapons and the SWAT team and invasive technologies, and that is on their website, verbatim. It's also important to note that the money relocated from these funds will be put into better ways to support the funds, such as body cameras, which are really expensive, more efficient training, such as mental health training or de-escalation training, and other things like that. So, what are your thoughts on that, if you have any, DJ Feeds?
Yeah, so, I mean, defund the police, you know, has got a lot of different interpretations. And, you know, I think what you're describing in some ways is maybe the, like, most conservative approach to defunding the police, which is, you know, to take money away from, like, what looks like really extreme things, like military-grade weapons, and redirecting it back into the police system to do things like have body cameras or reforms. And, you know, that is a very conservative way to look at it. I know lots of people who are guided by defund the police with a different frame. I think the key difference maybe to me between defunding the police and reforming the police is the fundamental question of what are police, and I don't mean the people, but I mean the position itself, actually really good at addressing, and are they the best responders to the problems that are in their domain, right? And that's a big part of the conversation right now, which is the goal is community safety. When we start to ask ourselves the question, what makes our community more or less safe? What does a person whose only tools are, you know, a gun and the ability to take people to jail really gonna, it's a pretty blunt set of tools in some ways, right? When you think about what underlies community safety. So a lot of defund the police movement is about taking funding out of policing to shift it into other jobs, other roles in society that are better equipped to address those problems. And, you know, I think it's really important in some ways to make it not necessarily a personal conversation, but make it more about the same way somebody might be like, hey, you know what, we really have too many doctors that are focused on, you know, this particular disease that seems to be under control. We should cut some of those positions in our hospital and try to have more doctors who are doing other types of things, right? Nobody would look at that and be like, oh my God, you hate doctors. You think doctors are evil, you know, right? It's just like practical, but it gets much more sensitive, obviously.
Yeah. Beyond that,
those are some of my thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond that, the main thing personally is like the speculation on that, like, I'm trying to put it into words, but it's hard to say what we can do as well as reform certain things, because I am definitely in support of putting in money in different ways to make the community better, but part of it as well will be certain policies, such as banning certain chokeholds that are dangerous, or making it illegal to search places without a warrant and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of different fields of conversation when it is about this, though.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. There's so many ways this police conversations about policing in America have unfolded. And, you know, body cameras have definitely increased. You know, I've got mixed feelings about that, because I think when you first brought up this topic today, mm-hmm. you were talking to me about a particular, I think it was Audit the Audit. Is that the YouTube channel? And all of those are cases of police misconduct that are caught a lot of times on body cameras, right?
Yeah.
So body camera doesn't guarantee that there won't be misconduct.
Sure.
It's just like a consideration.
Yeah. For me, it's like, think of all the cases of where they have body cameras, then think of all the cases that aren't being documented that deserve just as much coverage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that's, you know, come out. There's been a lot of research done through, you know, investigative journalism that finds that there's a gross undercounting of police violence, police misconduct, and even police-caused deaths. And, you know, somebody had found that around 60% of deaths that were driven by police contact were being misreported, essentially, as other cause of death, right? And this is happening. These levels of corruption are really deep, you know, like, this is the coroner's office being, you know, trying to protect police by saying, oh, other cause or uncertain, when it's very obviously like, no, you tase this person to death, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing about the tools, you know, we're so numb in this society, I feel like, to things like chokeholds, to tasers, to guns, to, you know, you go to other countries, there's far fewer police. They have really goofy looking little cars that, like, wee, wee, and are like yellow and white. Like, they look like ambulances, not like black, you know, unmarked Ford, you know, like Avengers or whatever they're called. And just the act of physically arresting somebody, restraining somebody, tasing somebody, like, these are very, very physically dangerous things that can cause a lot of harm. You know, I know somebody who is still, you know, was forcefully arrested. An older person who ultimately the case that the police were bringing against had to do with like issues with her yard, and she has permanent nerve damage from the handcuffs she was put in. She couldn't drive for 6 months, right? And so just, I think we have to really stop and ask ourselves too, you know, why are we so desensitized to the very violent act of arresting and taking somebody's, you know, liberty away from them, right?
Yeah.
It happens a lot in this country in ways that don't happen in other countries.
So my main understanding is that the main focus of the movement, and That is a broad statement, because there's a lot of different different movements within the main movement, but from my understanding, it's all about trying to find a non-violent solution to the problems, avoiding the harm in the first place, in a way, a harm reduction. And that's kind of what I'm trying to focus about, because if you focus on de-escalation, you don't need violence. Preventative. If you be proactive, you don't need to be reactionary about the violence.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. What are your thoughts about, you know, you think about, I don't know, building on that, when you talk about de-escalating up front, you know, or how to avoid there being so much violence in the first place, what are some things, like, what sort of things come to mind for you that feel important for that to happen?
I think better training for mental health is one of them. If you look into this one case, during 2020, 06-26, there was an officer who was arresting a 73-year-old woman with dementia. She walked out of the store without paying, and it's not like she walked out with something super expensive like a TV, right? No, she walks out with like $14 of groceries. I'm not mistaken. I'm reading it right off here. And that's just, yeah, that's one thing. But if you look into it, in the case, she tries to pay, but then the store calls the police. And we can talk about, like, the moral efficacy of the store later, but the difference is police are required to serve, right? They're public servants. And during this, they threw her to the ground for quote-unquote resisting, and afterwards, on top of a bunch of physical injuries she sustained, she also sustained mental trauma and was diagnosed with PTSD. So, if you look at that, there's no reason that could have happened. And mental health, specifically, if you are taught to look at the signs of it, then you will be able to identify. Because in the footage, the cop is completely oblivious to any sign that she could be not in a situation to be able to articulate herself. Like, she's, like not responding, trying to walk away as, like, she was being put up, arms around her, like, head. She wasn't fighting. She was just, and mildly resisting arrest, which is a crime, but she was 73. She didn't know what she was doing. She had Alzheimer's. And if you just took the time to have a conversation with her, then that whole thing didn't need to happen.
And that's the piece that doesn't happen, you know? There's a huge disconnect between it just imbalance of power, you know, and that story is a very much an example of the story I was telling. This isn't, and people tend to always be like, oh, that's an extreme example, that's so rare, but it's not rare. It's very common that arrests for very small, low-level crimes, and oftentimes for people who are dealing with other mental health issues, right, turn out very violent. One of the sources of information that I really appreciate is the police violence report. It's policeviolencereport.org. And this is one of the few sources that is actually mapped across the country where, you know, sources of police violence are happening. Because, you know, the reality is that there are thousands of local police departments, big and small, all across the country, some at the city level, some at the county level, some at the town level, and you have state police. So it can be really hard to get good statistics about a lot of this, but that's the work of this group, is to try to gather this information from different places and put it together. And one of the key things that they've shown and lots of people have talked about is how many people, so in 2021, 101 people were killed after police responded to calls for help for somebody in a mental health crisis. right? So it's just the thought of calling the police because your loved one's in a mental health crisis and then them getting killed by the police is just gut-wrenching, right? And a lot of people live with that reality. And again, it's, you know, because police are sort of trained to see through the lens of, is this person breaking the law or not? And if so, I need to arrest them, right? That's it. That's the whole frame. It has very little to do with what is the nature of the crime? What is going on with this person? Is anybody actually in danger right now? You write like these larger questions that I think would help lead to that de-escalation you're talking about are not what, you know, police are trained to be doing. So again, to me, it's like, this isn't really a personal thing about, oh, police are bad people, and some are, but some aren't, right? It's more about, like, is the job set up to succeed? And it's not. It's set up to be a really violent job that a person is required to get into. But to your point about other options, there are really great programs happening where people have been creating what they call a crisis response team as an alternative to police. So again, this is like, does defund the police work, question mark? Like, what we're finding is that, you know, when there's a 911 call coming in and mental health providers are sent instead of police or with police just as backup, but they're not the first line, that there's been really positive responses in terms of reductions in violence, of diverting people away from jail, which usually just makes the issue worse, and actually getting people into treatment. So Eugene, Oregon, San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, Denver all have pretty big, robust programs that are now being put in place across the country. So anyway, I know we're coming around just past 6:30.
So we are approaching the halfway mark of our show. So I will play a nice song. We're going to have a nice news update. And when we get in, I swear, I can't speak today, guys. But when we get back, we're going to be a little bit, oh my God, see? But we're going to be shifting our focuses from a lot of the problems and to what we can do and what steps are that you can take to help solve those as like an individual. So yeah, but without further ado, we will be right back after the better weather, or the weather, ay Dios mío. After the news update and a song. So we will see you then.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 9th. Local early morning temperatures range from 53 degrees in Windham.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Will Solomon reports in the Times Union about a radical anti-vaccine group holding a rally September 10th in Columbia County as vaccines save people from COVID-19, monkeypox, polio, and other diseases around the world. The festival in a field at Clabrick's Cowboy Crossing Farm is being promoted by Do We Need This?, a Columbia County-based group that spread vaccine misinformation during the pandemic. The group also had a booth at the Columbia County Fair this year, promoting misinformation about vaccines. Patrick Connors, a Hillsdale resident who works on VaxFacts, a semi-regular newsletter that reports on COVID disinformation activity in Columbia County, said, and I quote, "Opposing vaccination and other public health measures to counter COVID-19 and spreading disinformation put the health of our entire Columbia County community at risk, particularly the elderly and other people with health conditions. DWNT are in effect advocating for their own freedom to catch and transmit COVID and other dangerous diseases to vulnerable community members," end quote. Richard Harrison, owner of Cowboy Crossing Farm, claims that, and I quote, "The Columbia County Health Freedom Movement does not have a right-wing connection at all," end quote. Connor says that is also misinformation. He said, and I quote, "On the national level, there have been a growing overlap between the anti-vax movement and the far right, and we're seeing the same here in Columbia County. Anti-vaxxers, some of whom support causes like organic farming and the environment, are making common cause with the far right and vice versa," end quote. One of the speakers at the Clabrick event is Bobby Ann Cox, who has falsely claimed about the January 6, 2021 attempted coup that, and I quote,
There is evidence coming to light that radical groups like Antifa, BLM, and other agitators were probably there and may have planned it as a distraction so that Congress could certify a fraudulent election while everyone focused on the media hysteria. End quote. That is not true. Right-wing groups backing former President Donald Trump organized and participated in the attempted coup trying to overturn fair election results. Michael Sesserman, a Columbia County-based public health professional, said, and I quote, "It's sad that people at the festival will be spreading and supporting lies about vaccines and spreading conspiracy theories. Reducing rates of vaccination increases the likelihood that we will see more outbreaks of preventable illness like measles and possibly polio," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nolan Hicks and Zach Williams report in the New York Post that Governor Kathy Hochul announced an emergency expansion of the state's polio vaccination efforts on September 9th after more of the deadly virus was found in Long Island wastewater. The state's health commissioner, Dr. Mary Bassett, said in a statement, and I quote, "On polio, we simply cannot roll the dice. If you and your child are unvaccinated or not up to date with vaccinations, the risk of paralytic disease is real. Polio immunization is safe and effective, protecting nearly all people against disease who receive the recommended doses. Do not wait to vaccinate," end quote. Hochul's order allows pharmacists, paramedics, and midwives to dispense the vaccine now. Polio was effectively eliminated in the United States in the 1970s following decades of aggressive vaccination. Now, though, only 79% of New Yorkers are vaccinated for polio. And you can read the full story in the New York Post. CNN reports that Republican Geoff Diehl takes on Democratic State Attorney General Maura Healey to become governor of Massachusetts this November. Diehl defeated businessperson Chris Daugherty by backing former President Trump more wholeheartedly during the primary campaign. Massachusetts, while known as a liberal state, often elects Republicans as governor, with only one Democrat, Deval Patrick, getting elected over the past 30 years. Current Republican Governor Charlie Baker decided not to seek re-election this year, but the former president looms over this election. Trump said of the Republican candidate, and I quote, "Geoff Diehl is a true patriot, a believer in low energy costs and our independent energy policy," end quote. Diehl refused to debate his Republican opponent in the primary. Daugherty said of Diehl, and I quote, "He's too extreme for our state. He pursues conspiracy theories. He has beliefs that are just not consistent with the state of Massachusetts," end quote. He added, and I quote, "It makes him not electable," end quote. Healey, on the other hand, would be the state's first elected woman governor, as well as the first out lesbian governor there. Read more about this story at CNN. Mid-Hudson News reports that Johanna Contreras, a deputy county executive in Ulster County, was sworn in as acting county executive on September 9th. She temporarily takes over for Pat Ryan, who resigned after being elected to take over the final weeks of Antonio Delgado's term in the 19th Congressional District in Congress. Delgado resigned to become lieutenant governor. Contreras said, and I quote, "I am committed to building upon the success of County Executive Pat Ryan's administration and continuing our work to support green growth and economic opportunity, provide financial relief to residents, and govern with transparency and fiscal responsibility. I have always centered the values of equity and inclusion and will continue to do so as acting Ulster County Executive," end quote. Contreras won't have the role for long, though, as a special election will be held to fill out Ryan's term. Ulster County Comptroller Mark Gallagher, former State Senator Jennifer Metzger, and Deputy County Executive Mark Ryder so far have expressed interest in running. Republicans so far have not put forth any names as possible candidates to run for Ulster County Executive. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather reports, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to 90.7 FM. You are listening to Clubhouse Radio. All of our opinions today are our own, and they are not held by the parent association of the Mental Health Association of Columbia Green, but shout out to them because they sponsor us. And yeah, we're back with the show. And we're going to be talking about some ways to help the problem, some things that, you know, us as people, like individual steps that we can take to help, you know, solve the problem. And I'm also joined with...
Hey, it's DJ Phoebs. Glad to be with you.
So, yeah. The first thing that comes to my mind is vote for your sheriff. Right?
Yeah, it's definitely the most direct line of kind of influence you can have about who's leading your local law enforcement, you know, and yeah, it's really, it's, I think a lot of people are like, oof, do I even want to touch that? And, you know, the reality is a lot of times it's not, you may not even have the best options, but the more you look at it and even think about, like, you know, who's running at all, and yeah, there's definitely a lot to pay attention there, so
yeah,
good suggestion.
That's definitely a very direct way of approaching it, but there's a lot of, like, I don't want to say indirect ways, because they are still just as important to the cause, but I would say inadvertent ways to help. If you help, like, serve your community in other ways, then, you know, that causes, like, a trickling effect. You get what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, I'm picking up what you're putting down. Like, yeah. How can you help downstream, where people getting into the position that they would even potentially be coming into contact in the first place with police in vulnerable ways, right? Like, how do we prevent homelessness so people aren't dealing with, like, police harassing, like, homeless people? So, like, you gotta move spots. Like, how do we help people struggling with drug addiction, right, so that they're not getting caught up in the system, you know, those sorts of things, for sure.
Yeah, so here, for an example, in case there's anybody in the audience who doesn't understand, because it can be a little bit complicated. Let's say you go out and spend time with, oh, the thought just left my head. It was such a good thought. This is so sad, Thebes, no! But, here, I'll try to think of a different example. If you go out helping people with, let's say you're a mental health worker, because that's an example that I can think of easy. And you go out helping people with these problems that could be getting into these interactions with these police. And you could help them by giving them advice, in case they do, in other ways, too. That was just an example that comes to mind immediately. But there's a lot of different things. I'm wondering if you have any examples that come to mind, DJ Phoebs.
I think that's a great example, and, you know, I think one of the big things is, you know, just the question about, when are you calling the police in general, right? Like, I'm sure folks have seen some of, like, the memes about, like, and just, and stories, right, about people like calling the cops on black people in the park for like for random stuff, right? There's like, and not just that, right? It's like, oh, you know, I had a neighbor who called the police because our dog was barking outside, and I'm like, why didn't you just come like ask me if it was, yeah, like that escalation, you know, is really takes for granted how dangerous a police interaction can be for certain people. So I think one of the key things people can do in general is just like try to resolve issues directly with people instead of immediately trying to get the police involved. And I think, yeah, a lot of times people don't want to deal with conflict as they see it or to talk to people directly, but you know, it literally could be a life or death,
yeah,
situation,
for sure,
on the other side of it.
I think it's a little bit of a testament that the police are supposed to be a tool for de-escalating situations, but we're in a position, jeez, you can hear how I'm combining my words, but we're in a position,
it's Friday, school,
yeah, yeah,
this,
yeah,
week,
yeah. But
it's all right.
We're in a position that calling them does that opposite. It can trigger more conflict and escalate situations, so yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and so, you know, there are community movements, you know, to even help people resolve issues, you know, like community restorative justice. You just did a week-long restorative justice training. Did they talk at all on that, about the connection between restorative justice work and, you know, the effort to shift away from our current policing culture?
Yeah, so restorative justice, it's a process of solving conflict, and it does address specifically police conflict too, but it involves sitting everybody kind of around in a circle, police, people who make laws for the police, people who are subjected to police discrimination, and just talking, because a lot of the times, we don't know what the solution is until we get people to think of the solution. You can see it here with me and Phoebs. We're trying to think of ways that, you know, every person could help, but that can be hard sometimes, yeah. So, that's the step of trying to talk to find the solution, to see what steps we can take. And that's how I would describe it personally. But yeah, stuff like that,
yeah,
a bunch of other programs to look up what's around you, because it is very different to where you are. And
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't want to be a cop out here, but it really is different. Everybody has different community advantages and disadvantages, but mainly, anything that benefits the community as a whole I would say also does directly benefit that too. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's fair. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, all these few things definitely can help. Another thing that comes to my head, not just, or I said this with voting for sheriff, but also vote for, if you want to, of course, people who will make the policies that help people. For example, we were talking about some policies earlier. This is from the Judiciary House. This is a Justice and Policing Act of 2020. And some of the things, like, this is something, for example, if you know any politicians who support the Justice and Policing Act of 2020, for example, there's going to be other ones, too, that have different approaches and different policies. But just reading down, like, it's all pretty common sense stuff. Banning chokeholds, like, you know, you don't want people to die from you choking them. I'm sure there's many different ways to peacefully detain somebody without putting them at risk of death. And other stuff like making lynching a federal crime. I mean, investigating police misconduct is a point on here. It's all pretty simple stuff. So if you know politicians or anybody like that who will support this type of stuff, I would say that's actively a step.
Yeah, it's a great point, because these decisions get made at lots of different levels of government, you know. So you need to look at elections from all different levels, literally from your county legislatures, who's going to make decisions about your county sheriff's office, to your state